welcome to Seagull Eagle. One has pebble beaches, the other has pebble-houses. This week at Brighton, another late goal, this time at Wolves, proving once again just how bad Fabian's plan A really is.
And at Crystal Palace, we make history twice this week. A famous 2-0 win in Europe against the Ukrainian champions and the end of our 19-game unbeaten run. In the least glamorous way possible, at Everton. Plus all the talking points from the pitch, the touchline and beyond for both clubs.
This is Seagull Eagle.
Good evening, Neil.
Ah, good evening, Andy. How are you?
I'm very well. Welcome to another episode of Seagull Eagle.
It's like it's never ending.
Well, I mean, it's a very big indication of another point in the week. Like, it's like not another one, surely. We haven't had another week.
I tell you what is ending.
What?
Palace's winning run.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd forgotten what it was like to lose, mate, to be fair. It's like nearly 6 months.
Oh.
Nearly. Look, we joke about this, but what an epic, epic run. And it wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't even an easy run. It was a run that took us, you know, through to Wembley to win trophies, to all the other bits
and
pieces.
That out. Yeah, but you lost Saturday, so.
And we lost against Everton, of all the bloody teams to lose to. But yeah, look, it's a sad ending. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not quite over it yet. It's kind of that, there's that feeling that I kind of, you know, like when you don't believe it's happened.
Yes, I understand what you mean. Yes,
I've kind of got used to this whole kind of like, maybe we were invincible. And I knew we weren't. But like in my head, I'm like, this is going to go on forever. When's it going to stop? Arsenal, eat your heart out. Unbeaten season, all that. And then all of a sudden it's like, reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there we go.
Look, this is what football's about. You've got perfect opportunity to bounce back next week. But this week, you're a loser. That's just the way it is, Andy.
I know, mate. But I'll be honest with you. I mean, since we've been doing this podcast,
yeah,
I haven't really had many a tough reviews to
you really
to
haven't.
Do.
I'm clinging on to this result as much as I can, even though we drew against Wolves. I mean, how depressing
but
is
mate,
that?
I mean, we'll talk about it later, but there was a point, up until about the 60-minute mark, it was all going rather well for me, and I was thinking another great podcast. Palace winning. On their unbeaten run. I was about to, you know, shout about 20-odd games unbeaten this. Second in the league, potentially. and then Nottingham Forest were getting spanked again, which, for those of you listening, you'll know that pleases me greatly.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously Brighton were losing, which is not great for you. But obviously, you know, I do bask in your misery when you lose, because that's the whole point of this.
Why do you think I turned up this week?
Well, absolutely. So I was thinking to myself, chuffed a bit. It's going to be a great Monday evening. And then, of course, it all happens.
Let's stay with Palace. Let's talk about the game overall. It was Sunday, wasn't it, of course? So at the Hill Dickinson Stadium.
Yeah, we lost, Neil. So just should we talk about the Brighton game?
No.
Okay.
Definitely not.
We'll go into it.
We are definitely going to talk about Palace losing.
Okay.
Well, look, I think first things first, as a almost neutral, I would say, having seen the highlights, I would say Palace probably feel a little hard done by. I think that's a fair statement to start with, at least on the first hour. But Everton, I mean, they're on a bit of a run themselves. They're doing pretty well.
Didn't they?
Yeah, they're doing pretty well, especially at home. So I don't think it was a huge surprise that they got something out of the game, but I wasn't expecting them to get a last-minute winner, put it that way.
I don't think many people were, mate. Do I feel hard done by? No, because truthfully, I think that we deserve that big run, and because we played brilliantly, and even as a Brighton fan, you can admit that, right? It's our best run. We have, though. We've played, and we with determination, we played a system
through
that works.
Through gritted teeth, Andy, I can say you have played the best you've ever played.
That's the point, right? It doesn't mean you have to like it,
no.
But that's the reality, and that's why we've got what we've got over the last 6 months.
Yeah, I agree.
I think, but there's also, every good run comes with a run of, luck's probably not the right word, but good fortune comes with it, right?
Yeah.
And I think, to really summarise it, if we were playing that game over an hour and we lost it, I mean, I would have been livid. Mm. Playing it over the 90 minutes, we were not as intense and we lost, we kind of lost that edge that we normally play with and we let them in. And I think that we had some bad luck and we'll talk about that because I think, ironically, the two goals that they scored were rubbish. Like, they were our fault, not their talent. It was one of them. And that's the only bit of it that grinds me, which is that this wonderful run has come undone by a deflection from flipping Grealish.
As a Brighton fan, I totally understand your pain of just giving the opposition goals.
But I don't feel hard done by, though. Do you get what I mean? I don't like the fact that Everton fans were snapshotting our social media page, which was like 19 games unbeaten. And then all of a sudden it disappeared and said, I don't know, Crystal Palace are great or whatever. But anyway, there we go. Look, Everton are a bit of a kind of a bogey team for us, I guess, is probably the best way.
We said that last week, didn't we? You've had a few draws recently, but actually over the whole 11 years or so, it's been quite a difficult game. Games to come up against.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, we haven't won in 11 years. The last win was in 2014, which was under Neil Warnock, Neil. So that just shows how long ago. And we've won just one of the last 21 league games with them, right? Mm. I think there's also another stat, something on the lines of the only game that Everton have ever come from behind in kind of like the recent couple of years to win was against us. That was the last time we played them.
They make a special effort to beat Crystal Palace.
Yeah, but there we go. Look, we went into it 19 games unbeaten. They went into it trying to beat us. It felt like a little bit of a cup final in that last 30 minutes. That atmosphere in that new stadium was epic. Yeah. Like the first 60 minutes, all you could hear was the Palace fans singing, you know, that they don't like UEFA and about Marinakis and all the other bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, when they got their penalty, it turned, right? Two changes for Palace from the side against Dynamo Kiev, which we'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. Mitchell came in for Borna Sosa and Saar back in for Hughes. So basically, the normal team.
Pretty much first choice.
Yep, the normal team. And look, bright start for us. I think we looked really comfortable on the ball, full of confidence. In fact, more so confident than normally we were. And we were looking great. We looked in control. We had a lot more of the ball than we normally do. I think possession at half time, the stats were pretty much 50-50 nil.
Right.
Which for us is like, ooh, and we were passing it round. We were keeping possession. We looked sharp on the attack. Pino had a really good chance in the first few minutes with Pickford making a good save. Then Gaye came in and Pickford made a big save again at point blank range. Mitchell hit the woodwork with a brilliant shot. Then another great pass through from Saar found Mateta, who went for the near post and missed. And so like all that opening bit, I think there was one chance for Everton early on, which wasn't particularly harrowing. And then it's like, I think, what's that? Five big chances on. Didn't take any of them. 37 minutes in came the breakthrough. Gaye made a pass into Pino. Pino turned and kind of, I guess, laid the ball into Saar, who played this beautiful ball into Munez on the overlap. And he just basically, I guess the best way to describe this was no nonsense, smash and grab. He went in and got it.
I mean, it was a lovely goal.
Yeah.
It was a very classic Crystal Palace goal in some respects, with the wing back finishing it off there. But I was so surprised by the amount of space he had. I mean, he had half the pitch to himself.
But you know why, though, don't you? Because Munez has kind of, he's worked out this genius plan, right?
Yeah.
Which everyone should know that. If you watch Match of the Day, you'll spot it, which is he manages to go invisible in plain sight, right? So, and bear with me on this.
Does he go in disguise or something?
Basically, he walks up and down the actual line, right? So when the ball's on the opposite side of the pitch, he will stay as far over the other side of the pitch as possible with his hand up in the air going, I'm ready.
Yeah.
And he basically, a lot of the time, he gets forgotten about because he stood next to the players warming up, right? So that, like, I think the defenders just kind of lose track of him.
Well, that's a fair point. And maybe their peripheral vision, they can't quite pick him out.
And then all of a sudden, he knows when to make that run and they know when to play the ball and he just appears out of nowhere.
Right.
And obviously his pace is quite epic.
Oh, yeah,
and I think he's been in the team of the week for the last 2 weeks in the Premier League now. So look. Great goal, well done. Half time, three or four clear chances. Let's be honest, everyone's saying it. it should have been dead and buried, that game. And it really should have been.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was very clear, even from the highlights, just the quality of chances that Palace had. And I have to say something at this point as well.
Yeah.
And you may be going on to talk about this, but I thought, from what I could see, this was the first, maybe the first proper appearance from Jeremy Pino where I thought, he's arrived. He looks in form. He looks like he knows what he's doing. He's knitting really good passing together. Mm. He just looked much more with it and ready now. I think the first few games he's looked a bit tentative, but this one he looked like he was playing really well. What did you think?
I agree with everything you said. I think the only thing I don't agree with was, I think it's probably his second game. I think the Kiev game midweek was probably the point where...
I don't really count that because it was like against some farmers, so it's not something I'm worried about.
Yeah, the Ukrainian champions, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the second game where, he's settled in, he's not getting kicked off the ball so much, he's getting braver, he's stopped that thing now where he's shooting from the halfway line to try and get his debut goal.
That's always helpful.
All that kind of stuff. So yes, he was having a great game. I think, look, Everton, let's be honest, they were shocking in that first half.
They
were shocking.
Yeah.
They made us look even better than we normally are, is the truth. And upon checking the league table, Neil, at half time for the second week in a row, we were sat in second place.
Oh, if only games were 45 minutes long.
Mate, I mean...
Mind you, we'd be relegated.
That's a good point, actually. Let's stick with not. So look, second half, Everton made a couple of changes, right? I think they brought on Beto and Alcaraz.
Yes, right, Tyler Dibling went off, didn't he? He had a in-and-out game. I mean, he's only a young kid, but I think that shows the depth of their squad isn't that great in that sense, because I think with Dewsbury Hall missing out because of suspension, it was a little bit of a gap there, really.
Yeah, and obviously Barry came off as well. And I think, honestly, this probably proved to be the masterstroke for Moyes, actually, because it took a little bit of a while to kick in. Mm-hmm. And they probably had their first spell of pressure with a few early chances in that second half, where it was really apparent for me watching it that, okay, this is a different game now. Although they didn't overtake us, but they looked like they had a little bit more fight in them. But our defence did what they normally do, and they stood strong.
Yeah.
And it was like, as a fan watching it, I was like, no, we're all right. We got this. Don't worry about it. Because I've kind of, the belief in me in the last 6 months, Neil, is, nah, mate, nothing's getting by him. It's fine. We had a good hold on the game, and we continued to create what I thought was some really good chances, mainly from that right wing, right? Yeah. Munez and Sarr causing big, big problems for Everton, as normal. And then came the goal that should and could have won it, with Munez playing Mateta in, a lovely chip in, which was cleared off the line by ex-Palace player O'Brien.
Yeah.
And it was really frustrating, proper frustrating, because, again, another one that should have won it, should have made it all dead and buried. No. And then there was another golden chance a few minutes after that where Pino set up Sarr, another beautiful setup.
Right.
He chose to play it to Mateta, who missed an absolute sitter, hitting it just wide.
Oh, I saw that one. Yes, now I know. I know the one you're talking about. That was probably the best chance, in my opinion, of all of it, because it fell to Mateta as well. I just felt that should have been the goal.
And in Mateta's defence, right, it looks awful from the angle that we watch it on telly. Mm. When you watch it from a different angle, you realise why Mateta did play it wide, because the defender was directly in front of him with his foot out, kind of foot out, angled out.
Yeah.
So therefore, if Mateta had have hit it on target, it would have gone straight to the defender. But you couldn't see it at the angle where the telly was.
Sure.
So I don't blame in his entirety. But there we go. So if you think about that now, that's pretty much on that 60-minute mark. And whilst Everton have ramped it up, we're still breaking them and we're still getting through. And again, as a Palace fan, I'm like, this is going to come back to haunt us.
You just feel it, can't you? Mate, one goal, you always feel it.
I think I said it four times to the people I was watching it with. And then, true to form, Everton ramp up the play. Spurred on by the atmosphere in their new stadium, there was like a, you could feel it, right? Bearing in mind, they got booed off at halftime.
Did they?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They got booed off at halftime by a good proportion of that stadium.
That's harsh.
I know. Because it was that bad, mate. Everton were playing that badly.
Okay.
And then a fine save by Henderson, the 66th minute, was probably the first warning shot where we were like, okay, they want this.
Yeah.
And then on 75 minutes, this is the point where you felt like the momentum started to change, right? There was, Lacroix was chasing what would be deemed as a dangerous ball in the box. Mm. And he brought down the player. And it's one of these ones where he knew exactly what was about to happen as he was mid-slide, whatever it was. Yep. And he, being the experienced player he is, he tried to pull out of it. And you could see, right? So his leg went from an extended position to leg under the body.
Yeah. I mean, he almost, well, I suppose he did hurt himself a little bit. Yeah. You could see the angle he was trying to stop himself from sliding into.
Yeah.
He almost did his knee in.
And then of course, the player went down like a sack of spuds.
Absolutely.
And you can't argue with it, right?
No.
Again, this is what we're talking about, which is you flick a coin and you go, which way does fate go? This was the turning point of the game. And obviously, penalty, Everton, and Ndiaye sent Henderson the wrong way. And unfortunately, again, the gods weren't with us. So then it was 1-1. And you're thinking, do you know what? Settle for a point here, right? Mm-hmm. Keep the unbeaten run going. It's all going to be fine. But it did feel a little bit like that stadium just went for it. The noise level was... I actually read a cut, and I don't know how much fact is in this because it did come from social media, not the greatest fact-checking from me here. But I heard that they'd recorded the highest ever decibel reading from a stadium at this point in this new... Bearing in mind, it's designed to do that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So you could... I mean, honestly, you couldn't hear the Palace fans. And that tells you something.
Right.
So, yeah, I think this whole stadium were on their feet, but I still didn't really see us walking away with less than a point, though, because I just didn't believe that anything bad could happen
again.
It's
what you're used to, isn't it? At the moment, you've got into this feeling of like they're invincible, as you were saying earlier, and it's you're so used to them pulling it out the bag and just being comfortable, especially defensively, that even if they can't score another goal, you're not going to concede another one.
We don't let late goals in, Neil, especially, and bearing in mind at this point, we're like gone 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, just tick it down. And obviously, and then of course, the ball went into the box. I mean, it was Ndiaye, 93rd minute. Beto headed it down. And then Henderson made a brilliant close range save.
Yeah,
like,
it was
brilliant.
A good save.
And then Munoz, the hero, cleared the ball. And I mean, bear it in mind.
Would we say cleared the ball?
Well, he did, you see, because he got it. Bearing in mind, 93rd minute, every one of their players was in that flipping box.
Yeah.
It was an absolute scramble. Munoz booted it as hard as he possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? It hits Grealish, right?
Yeah.
And then Cannon straight from Munoz's foot to Grealish, straight into
great
the back of the net.
From Grealish.
Grealish didn't know anything about it. He'll claim it, but he knew nothing about it.
Wonderful finish.
And this is the point, which is that ridiculousness was the goal that ended that nearest six-month run. I think a little bit cruel, but also, mate, we've had them the other way, so you can't, you know, you can't beat us up. But look, Grealish was, to be fair, I believe the difference in that game, right?
Yeah.
He spurred them on. He was watching him on the opposition was a bit different to watching him at England, right? But he was annoying to watch. He was, you know, niggling players, giving it the jip with the ref, all that kind of stuff, on and off the ball shenanigans, as I like to call it.
Yeah, he's one of those players that it's great when he's on your side.
Oh, mate, yeah, you don't want to be playing against him. Yeah. So, yeah, really strange fit. And it was almost like it wasn't true, mate, is the truth of the matter. You know, like when you're like...
Oh, Andy, don't look so sad. It's okay.
I was genuinely gutted. But I guess, look, we're just going to have to settle for what is now sixth place. I think it was fifth at the time, but we're now sixth place. And I'll take that. And I think, do you know what, the only thing to note before we move on to the Brighton game.
Well, I've got a few takes from the game for Palace as well. If you want me to just cut in here and just say a couple of things.
Yeah, go for it, mate.
Just, I think everything you've said there is pretty bang on, even though you're obviously biased.
I think I've been quiet.
I think you've been pretty fair. I think there's one big thing, though, that you've missed out on this game review. And that is you've really sort of ignored the last 20 minutes what happened to your team physically. Mm.
Oh, mate, they lost the momentum, they lost their fitness, they lost their...
Why do you think they lost their fitness, Andy?
Well, I mean, you refer to it regularly.
I
believe it's probably the Thursday-Sunday thing.
It is.
But
And
also,
it's probably the fact they haven't got a squad big enough to cope with it either.
Yeah, but do you know what
it surprises me that it was the first game and this has happened. Now, obviously, you had a bit of bad luck as well. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, technically, it's not the first game because, I mean, we went backwards and forwards to Fredrikstad. Obviously, we've been playing two games a week for a while now, but it's the first real one that we've gone over to Poland.
The big travel. That's
and the big travel.
Well.
But I think what didn't work for us was the likes of Deveni came on, Uche came on. Mm. And I mean, Uche's rating was 4.5, I think, on BBC Sport. So, like, unfortunately, the players that came on to replace the tired ones didn't have the impact that we wanted
Not
them
quite
to have.
There.
But
I just think the only reason I brought it up was because obviously, apart from just trying to tell everyone that I know everything, I was more trying to point out the fact that I think when you watch the game and you see the running stats and things like that, you could just see a noticeable drop off, obviously physically, with the Palace team in that last sort of 20 minutes. And I think obviously away from home, that's worse as well. You haven't got the support, someone to push you through. And I think, you know,
and when the heads go down,
yeah.
In
yeah.
that atmosphere, you can understand why it happened. It just turned away from us, mate. I think, to be fair, just like as a fan watching it, and I was like, that don't happen to us. I think the players were probably as shocked as the fans were. Mm. It's just not the status quo. And it's a tough pill to take, mate. And that's pretty much what Glasner's take on it was, which was, look, it's been a lovely run. We go again, but ultimately, we've had a good turn of events on some of the luck in the previous games, and it went against us, and sometimes you can't do much about it. The one thing that I did want to bring up, actually, was Mateta.
Mm.
Because, obviously, look, he's had a fine run of form, right?
He really has,
And it was only this week that he found out by watching, I think, was it Sky Sports or the whatever it was, that he'd been called up to the France squad.
Oh, has he?
He didn't get a phone call.
Did he?
Not even joking, mate. He found out by the media that he'd been called up to France.
I mean, congratulations to him. That's fantastic.
Mate, I mean,
that's a hell of a squad to get into.
French player in a striker position.
Yeah, that's a hell of a squad to get into.
I mean, bearing in mind, he did get called up for France with Elise back in the days. For the Olympic squad, which was kind of a bit of a fake squad.
But it is, because it's under 23s and things like that. So, I mean, to get called up to the big squad, that's amazing. I mean, I wonder how many strikers are injured.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you, my knowledge of that isn't great. But I tell you what, it'd be lovely to watch a France game for the Palace fans and see him and Elise linking up again, which would be lovely.
Good point.
But that wasn't actually the reason that I brought him up, because obviously he, let's be honest, has been called up to France, which is a big accolade, at the time where his form has actually been the lowest it's been for quite a while.
Right.
So I feel like France might have missed that peak in form that they were looking for to call him up. And I'm not digging him out, by the way, because I do think that he's going to come good. But if we have a look at why we're not winning games and we were before, this is my take on this, which is he missed two what they officially class as, and this is not from my opinion, but what the stats class as, big chances.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Okay.
He missed two in that game. We talked about them earlier, right? And then not only that, he's missed 7 out of 9 big chances this season.
Really?
7 out of 9.
That's
right?
Interesting, actually, because I, as an outsider, I look at Palace and see their performances and think everyone's on song, they're playing really well, everything's going, you know, their way. In actual fact, what that suggests is that their main striker is actually not quite on song.
Well, there's something even more outlandish to say, which is that he is the biggest underperformer on XG as a striker in the league.
Is he? And you're still getting those results. That's fantastic.
And I think this is why. But if you have a look at that 19-game unbeaten run and the amount of draws that were in that game, the majority of them draws should never have been draws. Mm. And that's not a biased opinion. If you look at the XG, you look at the chances created, we haven't been able to find the back of the net in so many occasions.
So it feels like that, does it? As a fan watching, do you feel like there's been missed opportunities?
Oh, mate, there's like, I can't bash Palace, man, because this is the best.
Exactly, that's why I'm asking.
This is the best run we've ever had.
But still feel
when
like...
When you watch a game you see the amount of chances that we're creating, you're this is absolutely brilliant. What if all of them went in, or even two-thirds of them went in, or even half of them went
in?
And that's why I just hope and pray that the international break has a positive effect on Mateta. He gets a good rest and he comes back, because I genuinely believe that there is so much untapped potential, especially with Pino hitting form now and like Sars back. And I think this is the point. He's getting the service, and unfortunately, he's just tipped off after the start of the season. So let's hope he finds his form back again. I'm not blaming him, by the way. What I am saying is, if he comes good again, wow, we could be brilliant.
Gotcha.
Apologies to Brighton fans. I'm aware that went on a while. Over to you, Neil. Let's talk about your epic game against Wolves.
Oh, my God. Andy, Wolverhampton Wanderers 1, Brighton and Hove Albion 1. I think I could probably sum this match up in one sentence.
Are you allowed to say that sentence?
I am. I've censored it. A game of one silly mistake and no ideas. I think that's it, really.
Well, I mean,
good night.
Let's be honest, Neil. Let's be honest. You got a point.
Yeah, which I didn't know you were going to say that.
No,
I just knew it.
No, but you got what?
Oh, you got a point. You didn't lose.
Well, yeah but
Andy,
look at our game.
No,
we got nothing.
No.
Look at your game. You got a point, which actually, to be fair, at half time, you weren't getting.
No. A reminder that Wolves are sitting bottom of the Premier League with 1 point before kickoff.
I'll take that reminder and I'll rub it in your face.
Wolverhampton Wanderers doubled their points tally against Brighton and Hove Albion. Obviously, because, you know, we're playing a side that are bottom of the league. So we know what Brighton are going to do.
Well, you know what you got to do, didn't you?
What's that, mate? Go
be
on.
Better.
Yeah, brilliant. I'll message Fabian. Lineups. So no Mitoma at all. Now,
is he injured?
Well, so this is the thing. It was on the press conference on Thursday. We finally got a little bit of an indication. He wasn't in the Japanese squad for the international break. So that was a big indication. Mm. And then Hörsler said that he'd been carrying a bit of a foot injury, actually, for the last couple of weeks. And they've been sort of playing him and he's been trying to play through it. So they've sort of said now, with the international break coming, knock it on the head, give him a break for a bit and see if he can get rid of it. So from one perspective, I was like, okay, that's good news that it's not all about form. It could have been to do with injury as well. The other side of it was, as we know with Brighton sometimes, oh yeah, it's just a little foot injury, a week or so, could be 6 months, who knows? We'll soon find out. But that was the one big change. The other things that really were an indication from the first 11 that he chose was he sort of went with the 11 that ended the Chelsea game almost, apart from Belaba back in midfield, and he put Jorginho Rutter on the bench. So it was all a bit of a... So he left Welbeck up front. Look, scoring two goals when he came on for sub, I can understand why he started. You think to yourself, striker in form, I'll leave him on the bench.
Kind of earned his stripes there, didn't he?
Exactly. So I understand that. He's put Minté on the left, this time starting on the left. So where we had the joy last time against Chelsea on the left, he started him on the left. And I'm like, just feels a bit like something worked, so I'm going to do exactly the same thing next time.
Do you think he was trying to call the opposition's bluff, that they would think potentially that he wouldn't do that?
I don't know. I feel like
you've got a manager that maybe overthinks things sometimes with the tactics and things like this. But anyway.
Got plenty of time for that, mate. Yeah. I'll tell you all about it. Gruder comes in for Mitoma, so he plays right wing, therefore. And then, yeah, as I say, so Welbeck's up front with Gomez in the hole still. And for some reason, Jorginho Rutter's on the bench. So it was a little bit of a scratchy head moment.
When's it not?
Well, yeah, I agree. Mats Wiefer comes back from injury this time and actually starts. Obviously, the central defensive midfielder at right back again.
Yeah.
And first half, right? Wolves were awful. Let me repeat that. Worse than awful. Totally understand why they had 1 point from the season so far.
Yep.
And I totally understand I'm telling you that we got a point at Wolves by me also saying that Wolves were awful, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen a worse team this season so far, so I understand why they were that bad and why they are in the position they're in. Albion created a few half chances, nothing gilt-edged, but a few, you know, they started okay, but still, and I've seen this every single game so far, it feels like none of the passing is slick. None of the passing is sticking. You know, that sort of feeling, like not quite working. Mm. A pass is going to where a player was 2 seconds ago or should have been, but looked a different way. Or it's just not quite, nothing, it's just not quite gelling. And it's very frustrating to watch.
Probably because they don't know who's standing next to them, mate, because they keep changing.
I totally agree with you, mate. So Belaba, right? So he starts the game. He gets booked, I think, 20 minutes in. 20 minutes into a game, your central defensive midfielder gets booked for a stupid decision right on the edge of the halfway line and on the touchline. Nowhere in danger, nothing going on, but he gets booked for that. He's below par again and would be for the whole of that half, right?
Should have sold him.
There's also a moment where, I don't know if you saw this, right? So just around that time, there's a moment where Wolves think they should have had a foul in the centre circle, and because Albion go on a quick attack, basically.
Yeah.
And so Vitor Pereira, the manager, he gets so angry and so incensed that he kicks this water bottle towards like the referee and the online officials and things. Honestly, it was the camera just picks it up because you see him. He gets so angry. And like most managers do, they have that little moment where they kick something. But as he kicks it, he realizes what he's done and he can see this thing flying off, obviously. And then the second he goes, he puts his hand up and sort of goes, oh, sorry, you know, oh yeah, just lost my temper, don't worry, everything's fine, you know, carry on. No, the game stops, referee comes over, little red card for him, so he's off you pop.
And then didn't his assistant manager then apologize on his behalf at the end of the game? Because that's the second time that's happened, isn't it? There was another game. Was it Chris Wilder?
I think it was. Last weekend he booted
a ball and it hit a fan straight in the face.
Yeah. His own fan as well, just to point out, which was even more funny. Yeah. So it's
brilliant.
So he got a red card. And to be honest, just seconds after that red, right, I think it was 21 minutes, 22 minutes, Wolves, having not created anything, Albion decide to give them a head start. And it is literally that. Like, Welbeck, trying to defend a cross, comes back, heads a ball straight into the path of Mounetsi.
Yep.
I don't know if you saw it.
I watched it a few times.
Volleys it in goal. I mean, it's a great volley. And actually, to be fair to Verbruggen, a fantastic save.
A brilliant goal.
Well, exactly. Like it's unbelievable. Like, it's a great save because it's a great reaction.
It is.
But he makes the save. It hits the crossbar and does what those annoying things do, which is comes back down, hits him on the back of the head, and goes in.
Yeah.
I mean, how is your luck? You know, that was frustrating.
The annoying thing is, right, for him, right, is that obviously he's got an own goal out of that.
Oh, yeah.
But if he'd have done nothing, he would have been completely, like, away from all of the controversy, wouldn't he? Do you know what I mean?
And it's a fantastic save.
It is.
And then all he gets for his trouble is a goal scored up against him. I mean, it was really bad. Woeful from Welbeck. Really woeful. Experienced player, should know a hell of a lot better than heading it down into literally the penalty spot in your own area. Just ridiculous. And yet again, we concede the first goal.
It just looked a bit, again, I'll level with you, Neil. I haven't seen the whole game, right? Sure. So I've only seen the snippets.
Unfortunately, I have.
Okay. So it did just look a little bit panicky from my perspective, from the Brighton players, as the kind of the balls were flying in at this point. It just felt like there wasn't an assurance that it was going to be okay.
I think that's fair, actually. I think there's an element of that, and that comes with youth. I think there's an element of our young players are a bit like that. What worries me is that it should be that the older players are starting to step up and calm everyone down. Didn't feel like that this weekend. And you know, we continue to limp along for the rest of that half, basically. We didn't really create too much, making silly mistakes in the midfield. And to be fair, even worse decisions in the final third. We just did not get it working in any way. We were really slow in places. And when we did speed it up, what I was talking about earlier happened, where we were just making decisions on passes that were going in the wrong direction or someone would move in the wrong way. Look, the ref blows for half time and I'm about as bored as Evangelos Marinakis' personal trainer. It is.
I'll give you that one.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
That's how bored I am, right? That's how low I feel. Yet again, we're behind at the break. And yet again, we need to make a change in some way to try and get something from this game. The second half starts and Fabian Hursler makes one change straight away at half time. Can we guess what happens? Well, he brings Carlos Belaba off because presumably he's got a yellow card and he hasn't performed that well. And he brings Jorginho Rutter on. So the one bright spark that we normally have on the pitch, he brought him on at half time. So he puts Gomez back into midfield, basically, alongside Ayari. And yes, it makes us a little bit more attacking, and we start to get a bit more of, well, not even a bit more, probably complete control of the territory in that sense. We really start to just spend most of our time in the final third, in Wolves' half. And what happens is, it gets to about 60 minutes, we still haven't created much, right? We just got the ball and we don't know what to do with it. We're just passing it around. It gets to 60 minutes though, and this is the earliest that I've seen a team decide we're going to hold with what we've got and defend until the final minute.
Wow.
60 minutes, they bring on a central defender and go to five at the back. Not a three at the back and two wing backs, a five at the back, right?
They're at home as well.
Honestly, 60 minutes, I was absolutely flabbergasted. But at the same time, they know they're playing Brighton, and what can Brighton can't do? They can't beat a team low down the league who puts a block and doesn't decide to run out.
But to come back from behind and get a point seems to be a little bit of a pattern, does it not?
Oh my God, does it? Right, this is, I mean, it's...
It's not like, I mean, I'll be honest with you, at halftime, I saw this coming.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was...
And I wasn't watching the game, mate. Do you know what I'm saying? As in my perspective of that game, seeing it on BBC Sport under the score section, without having any knowledge of it at that, because I'm watching the other one,
yeah.
I'm like, they're gonna come back and equalise, and it's going to ruin my day.
So this was the thing, right? Going five at the back so early just made it so little opportunity for Wolves to get a second. They had the odd little chance, obviously, where they broke away and they actually hit the post once, but the chances were few and far between for Wolves. All it did was just give Albion the ball in their half and them say, try and break us down. And to be fair, we didn't break them down. We had so few chances. Look, we made a few other changes, right? Nearer on the second half, De Kuyper came on finally and played at left back, right? So he was on the bench.
Yeah.
So we had Kadioglu first half at left back. And we had Weaver at right back, okay? So that's right. So we had a right-footed left back and we had a central defensive midfielder at right back. So, yeah, I don't know. Right, so we get De Kuyper on the pitch, a natural left-sided, used to being a left-sided player on the left side. And we have Simas up front to join in with Welbeck, not taking him off. So we're basically saying,
going
all out, let's just try and do it, right? He takes Weaver off completely. And he takes Gomez off. So basically what we're doing now is we've got like one midfielder. We've got Kadioglu steaming up and down the right wing now as a right wing back.
Mm-hmm.
We've got De Kuyper joining Minté on the left. So all just basically trying to encamp that half and essentially trying to get the ball in. And for some reason, the tactic again this week was... So this is what frustrates me, right? So this week, the tactic was what we did against Chelsea in the second half worked, therefore it must work now, so we're going to do the same thing. So we put Minté on the left and we cross. We put Kadioglu in the second half on the right and he crosses. And rarely did we do anything in the 10 space. Rarely did we break any lines. We just waited for them to get back into position. We stayed on the left or the right and we just tried to chuck it in the box. Now, that works sometimes, absolutely.
If you're playing Chelsea, Football Manager at the age of 13, Neil, yeah.
Or if you're playing Chelsea and they've got 10 men and you want to spread the pitch out, I understand that. But they haven't got 10, they've got 11, they've got a back five, they've got all their defenders in place.
But that's the point though, isn't it? It doesn't feel like an intelligent move, mate.
I totally agree.
It's like clutching at straws. And again, that's my analogy of Football Manager or Championship Manager. Like when I used to play it when I was a kid, and it's like you spank someone 6-0 and you keep the same team on, you don't look at the next game, you don't look at who you're playing up against or what formation they're playing, you go winning formula and then all of a sudden bang. And that's the point. I worry about your young manager and his inexperience, but we can talk about that later.
We get to 86 minutes, right? And we finally do score. And, you know, it was on the cards in the sense that they were never going to score. It was either going to be 1-0 or 1-1. That was just the way it was going to be, right? We finally score, as I say. It is this time something slightly different. It's a bit of quick thinking. So we get a corner. Minté doesn't wait for everyone. He quickly runs over. He takes the ball really quickly, passes it to De Kuyper.
Yeah.
The defence haven't settled. He just swings it straight in and a good, really good cross, to be fair, this time. JP's coming in because he's running into the box anyway because there's a corner coming up, and he heads it home. So the defence hasn't had a time to settle, and we get a goal, right?
It's a clever move. I saw that, and I was like, sneaky, like it,
exactly.
Fair play.
And that's fine.
What you should be doing.
There you go, mate. That's exactly what you should be doing. There wasn't any pace when we were playing with the ball the whole game, really. And look, the final whistle goes basically to put both teams out of their misery. I mean, if both teams could have lost, it would have been a better result.
Really?
That's how bad Wolves were, and that's how bad I felt we were. And, you know, I can be like this because I'm a fan and I feel it. I understand that the players on that pitch worked hard. They put effort in. I understand that. I'm not suggesting our players don't want to play. I'm not suggesting they don't work hard.
Even the one that should have gone to Man United?
Even Carlos Baleba, they're trying, okay? I understand that. So okay. My problem is when I look at and I think about final thoughts of the game, right, I was trying to write something down positive, okay?
Yeah, go on.
So I've got here, right, this is what I've put down. Okay. Positives, bullet point one. Not many. Bullet point two. Ferdy was hardworking. Started to get into a bit of form, I think. Okay. Bullet point two, the team yet again coming back from or avoiding defeat. Yeah, that's it, mate. That's my positives, right? Negatives. We continue to have a lack of cohesion. And we continue to not quite understand what each other are doing or where we should be playing.
It's because I don't think the players know where they should be playing.
There are individuals having bad days, which is fine. As I said, week on week here. But is there something deeper going on here? Baleba, you know, poor again. Welbeck, invisible. Apart from an assist for the Wolves goal, he's basically invisible. I've got questions, right? And I just don't know. Lots of fans talking about things. It's just never ending at the moment, this sort of frustration of watching my team.
Well, look, there's some stats that are interesting, right? Yeah. I've got a few things to say about this, right? The stats show Brighton, 17 shots, 6 on target. 6 shots for Wolves, 3 on target.
Yeah.
17 shots, Neil, and you just about scraped one in pretty much extra time.
Yeah.
So what that, I mean, I'm assuming the majority of them stats came when they went to 5 at the back with the shots and stuff like that. I don't know, you tell me.
Well, 7 of those shots were from outside the box, right?
So okay, you look getting at it
from
desperate.
Exactly. So you look at it from that perspective straight away and you're like, well, already almost half of the shots were just pot shots from outside the box, trying something.
Because they were obviously camped in their own box.
And
Yeah.
But we still have to do something to break that down.
No, you're
it's
absolutely
right. It's not a surprise,
right,
is it, that they were going to do that? Yes, they did it early, but it's not a surprise they did that. If every team understands that Brighton can't break down a low block, then what do you think they're going to do?
Well, you've got to learn how to do it against us soon. But the next one is, I did mention this last week and I will continue to mention
it. Yeah, go on.
Brighton have kept just one clean sheet now, and this stat's changed, in 18 Premier League games.
Yep.
With, obviously, I think that started with the 2-0 win at Wolves in May was when that actually was the last time that you kept a clean sheet.
I remember it well.
And obviously, just 4 teams now without a clean sheet so far this season. Wolves, Forest and Man United are joining you on that one. So I think, imagine a world where Brighton don't go behind and manage to not let in a goal. I actually think, I mean, have you got enough up front? I mean,
this is the only problem, Manny. We've only got 2 problems. We can't score goals and we let goals in. Apart from that, we're fine.
Mate.
Right?
Yep. It's that simple, isn't it? It's that simple. But my biggest question for you, Neil, my biggest question, without wanting to pile on the woes, because let's be honest, you know my philosophy on this whole football game. Point one, don't lose. Point two, try and win, right? Because that's how you rack up the points. You got a point, right? What are the Brighton fans saying about this? Because I look at this and go, you didn't lose it. You were going to lose it. You came back and it shows a bit of grit. Like, and I know it was a bit of tongue in cheek, mate, when you said that in your list there. And you were like, we came back from behind again. From the outside, especially being a Palace fan, that annoys me because I thought 3 points lost. Now it's only 2 points lost.
Yeah.
So do Brighton fans see it like that? What are they saying about this result? What's the general feeling in the Brighton camp, Neil?
Okay. Well, if I go across the socials, if I talk to other people,
yeah.
some of the things that people are saying, right? So like, no one thought it was a good performance, obviously, right? Straight yep. away. There's no one sitting there going, there's a few comments of plucky to keep coming back and trying not to lose, right? Which is fine. I get that. But how much of that is the players just actually having heart and wanting to do something in spite of the manager's decisions? That's my question. Ooh. So, well, because he's every time we play a game so far, as you've just alluded to, mm-hmm. we concede a goal. A lot of those, this season, we've conceded the first goal in five of our seven games.
I was going to ask you about that. I'll be honest with you, I didn't, because I didn't want to throw you a stat where you had to answer it. It's five out of seven.
Five out of seven, we've conceded the first goal, right?
This season. That's where you're going wrong, right?
Well, exactly. Yeah. So, and I can't tell you of this one. I don't know the stat, but someone will be able to tell us, I'm sure. Of the seven games this season, I reckon at least six of those games, we've probably made a change at halftime.
Yep.
Because something isn't right, Andy.
Yeah.
The plan at the beginning of the week that we've trained for didn't work. Right? So whose fault's that? I'll leave that one floating. So there are a lot of people on social media, a lot of fans asking questions, therefore, about things like that, what the plan is, what, and the other thing they're talking about is what is our style now? What is Brighton of Albion?
Well, I was going to ask you that. I was good because you were talking about that quite a lot at the beginning of the season when we were talking about it, and you were saying about that you don't understand what style of play, what's the what is our look and feel of our team?
Yeah,
you know.
I think if we as we go into the international break now, I think we're in a world of uncertainty. I think we are what feels like a little bit. We've got a lack of identity of what Hörsler team is. You know, we're not quite
sure. That's
a good
way of putting it, actually.
We're not quite sure what it is. I think, do you know what, actually? I think what I'll do is I'll have a think properly, and next episode, as it's the international break, and we've got a bit more time to discuss things in detail, I might come back with our first swooping statement of the season.
Do you know what's really funny there? I feel like you just summed that up in that sentence, which is that I said to you, what are you all about?
Yeah.
You said about identity.
Yep.
And then your words were, I'm going to have a think about that, which means that you're struggling to answer that question.
That's exactly what I think my swooping statement will be about. I
look forward to that.
So look, we currently fit in the Crystal Palace position of 12th in the Premier League.
I did note that, actually.
We've played seven, we've won two, drawn three, lost two. The epitome of inconsistency.
12's done us good over the years, mate. So, do you know what, though? It could be a lot worse, Neil.
It really could.
It could be a hell of a lot worse.
Join us after the break, where we talk about Crystal Palace and their little European tour. See you in a mo. Welcome back, everyone. This is Siegel Eagle, and after the Premier League fun that we've been talking about, I say fun very loosely.
Yeah, it's a bit of a dismal first half, that, wasn't it?
It was a bit, wasn't it? You just feel the angst and the frustration from both of us, I reckon, probably. I'm not going to enjoy this bit, but we do need to talk about it. We need to talk about the Conference League.
Oh, mate, it's a lot more chirpy than the Premier League this season for us. Absolutely.
For you it is, yeah. Look, Dynamo Kyiv, 0-0, nada, not a thing. Crystal Palace, 2, which I think was your prediction, wasn't it?
It was actually, Neil, and I just want to thank you for referencing that I got that correct.
Hey, look, I'm all up for us getting things right. I think that's great.
I've done all right on my Palace predictions recently, because when you're on a good run, such as ours, you tend to do all right. It's the losses you don't predict.
Yeah, I totally get you. Well, look, talk me through it. How was it? How did it feel? How did it go? What was your feelings like? I mean, it's an exciting time, in all seriousness.
Mate,
Talk to me about it, mate.
Well, the first thing I want to do is a little bit of a disclaimer, which is that for those of you who listen to the pods, you'll know that I'm not known for my pronunciations. Both of football clubs and football players, which is probably not the best thing for someone who does a podcast. But, you know, I know my own limitations. So I will, from this moment, refer to them not as Dynamo Kyiv, which is whatever you pronounced it. I will pronounce them as Dynamo Kyiv, as in chicken Kyiv.
Nice.
Because that's what I've always called them.
Fair enough.
And I'm just doing it anyway.
Don't change. Don't ever change.
No, I'm going to try not to.
Go for it.
Our first ever match in a major European competition, Neil, against Ukrainian champions and also a club of big distinction. And we know that...
A club of great history, I have to agree.
Absolutely. We know that they're not at the heights that they were before, but also a team that were unbeaten in 39 domestic games. Understandably, it's in the Ukrainian league. They haven't obviously had a great run of it in Europe because obviously they were in the Champions League, knocked down to the Europa League, knocked down to the Conference League in terms of qualifying. So they haven't been in a great run in Europe. But of course, they as we talked about last week, I went on this massive rant, didn't I? And you loved it, which was, I'm a little bit unsure about this game. And then after talking about that for 5 minutes, decided that we were going to win 2-0.
Yeah, I did see the irony, yeah.
Yeah. So I still had apprehensions because I just didn't quite know how it was going to go. But anyway, look, 2,500 Palace fans went out there.
Was there? 2,500?
2,500. We sold out our allocation. And mate, tickets were, I think, something like the equivalent of £9.
Yeah.
If you're willing to spend £350 to spend £9, then that was it. I did nearly think about going. Unfortunately, work commitments wouldn't allow. But yeah, hopefully maybe see if I can get out to one of the ones later on.
Okay.
Anyway, look, we were on our 19 game unbeaten run on
that record.
That's
aged well, isn't it?
I know. And obviously, as I said, Dynamo Kyiv were kind of on a decent little run themselves, actually. Lineup wise, Sosa started in place of Mitchell, which I didn't see coming.
Really?
No, I didn't see coming. He has played the European games, but I thought that Glasner was going to play what he always refers to when he gets asked about team lineups, which is a bit of a home goal, really, when you think about it, for everyone who's planning their games against us. He will always say, I will always play my strongest team, right? My strongest available team, because I want to win everything. And it does actually make sense by the fact that Mitchell, we didn't know, was actually sick earlier on in the week. I think, maybe a sickness bug, something like that. So it was deemed that Sosa would start. And then Hughes started in the place of Saar, because obviously he'd only just come back from injury from the previous game. He'd had a cracker, but he still probably didn't have 90 minutes in him.
Oh, hang on. So when you said in the place of Saar, you don't mean literally in the position that Saar plays. Kamada probably went up the front.
Correct.
Like, yeah,
Kamada went up.
Yeah, okay.
But obviously he replaced Saar.
Got it.
So Hughesy started, which was an interesting thing because obviously Hughesy loves a tussle in the middle all that, which is great. Anyway, to sum it up, mate, it was, I believe, a great performance from Palace. Wasn't easy to break the opposition down. Opening goal came from Munez. It was a wonderful, wonderful header or a superb heading cross.
I know what you mean. It's one of those that there's not really an indication either way. I mean, there are players in the box that he could have headed to, so there's an option there. But the way his body is, the shape of him, I don't know. I wonder whether he... I mean, trust me, I'd be the first one to say someone didn't do this properly, but I wonder if he meant it.
Well, here's my take. Because obviously, look, it was a brilliant cross from Pino.
It was.
And obviously, he kind of... Munez then kind of looped it over the keeper. And it was kind of one of them ones where, as I say, some people might think it's an assist. I still believe, like, our philosophy on the second ball, as it were, we're good at that.
Yeah.
We're good at getting the head in the box and basically causing havoc, which is how we've got most of our goals. So I believe that his emphasis was put it goal bound. I don't question that. I don't think he was trying to set someone else up, but I think he probably thought that someone else might get on the end of
it. It's the percentages ball, isn't it? That's
exactly
what they used to call it. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a really good way of putting it. So I do think he meant send it goalbound, but I do also believe that he was a little bit surprised when it went in. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think he'll probably claim that it was meant to happen. But either way, mate, I loved it. I loved every bit of it, and it was brilliant. And it's, do you know what? I just love to see Danny Munez score goals, because prior to him joining Palace, he was clocking them up, right? He was clocking them up. And when he first joined us, you could see, right? I remember that first game, sat at Selhurst Park, watching him play, and you could just see how quickly he changed our team.
Yeah.
And he was the first one, I think, the first one that visibly changed our style of play. If one player could do it,
the rest of them led from that
and the work ethic and all the other bits and pieces. So he deserves everything he gets.
I think that's a really good observation, actually, Andy, because I think when you think about playing this type of play, formation, this style that you want to play, the single most important players on that pitch for that style and that formation are the wing-backs.
Of course.
Because they have to do everything. To get someone like Munoz, on the pitch and to sign him and then suddenly see that what a transformation that makes to your side, I think you're absolutely right.
But the only bit of his game that he was probably missing that he had prior in a inferior league, granted, but he had prior to joining us was the goals.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm pretty sure, I mean, I need to check this stuff. I think he's on 4 now. For this season.
Okay.
So he's doing really, really well. Then the second goal came from Eddie the Eagle and Nketiah, who has taken some stick from me, right? And let's be honest, I think it's warranted, right? This guy's come in on a big money move for us from a big club, meant to be the next Ian Wright, and he hasn't fulfilled his potential. And he sat on the bench.
I think that's harsh, Andy. I think that's harsh to say, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think that's harsh to say he hasn't fulfilled his potential. I think it's...
do you think he was meant to be sat on the bench coming on at 80 minutes?
I think it's a strange signing. Did he sign before or after Glasner?
Before.
Before Glasner.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he hasn't been fulfilled.
And we talked about that last season, didn't we?
Yeah, I don't think that's on him. I don't think that's on him. It's just to some degree. I don't think you can suddenly change the type of player that he is. He's not a number 10, so he can't play behind Mateta, and he's not a big, strong number 9 like Mateta. He doesn't quite fit the mould that you guys need him to fit.
But he does bring something different to us, and I think he's now working out where that is. And I think, to be fair, he has played that role behind Mateta or whoever was playing in front of him at the time before the more kind of attacking midfield role. But I think what's frustrating about him is that I don't think I've seen a single game of him playing where he hasn't been offside. And this is the frustrating thing, right? As soon as you see it, you're just waiting for that flag to go up. As soon as he does something brilliant, because he's always there.
It is one of the most frustrating things to watch with your striker, who's usually quite quick, whoever the striker is as a team. Yeah, I know, I agree. It's the same for me. We used to have that all the time. And it's like, it's the single most frustrating thing to watch. Isn't it?
Yeah, and I think I think there's little bits of his game that Glasner's probably got frustrated with, which is that the amount of build-up play to get to that one moment and then obviously offside. And obviously 15 minutes this guy took to make an impact really off the bench. Mm. And he did, right? And this is what I'm saying. It's coming good now. I feel like he's learning the style. He's come back from injury. He's hungry for it.
So when he came on, who did he replace?
Mateta.
So he came on as the number 9, as the striker.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that's interesting, because I think that's showing faith in him from the manager that maybe he's starting to understand the formation better. I think that's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he is. I really think he is. And obviously, look, he then did what I thought he would do, which is that he would get a narrow offside awarded against him a couple of minutes after coming on. Pino skipped past two defenders in the corner, which, did you see that one?
I did.
Mate.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And then the Travella cross.
Yeah.
Lovely team goal. And obviously, Eddie was in the right place at the right time. So after that disallowed goal for offside, obviously straight back at him, and Eddie was hungry, right, for it. And Pino showing the world class that he was. To be honest with you, I think in the interviews afterwards, everyone was a little bit like, Eddie, mate, great goal, but let's talk about Pino. And Eddie's reply to that was, he deserves to be spoken about. He's a world-class player. He's got, you know, he's been capped for Spain, and there's a reason for that. And I think when you asked me earlier about was that game against Everton the first time that Pino had showed his, this to me was like, this is Pino understanding the system, working out who's playing with, knowing where to pass that ball,
And I think that's how the Conference League will help your newer players bed in more, because they'll be playing against, let's be honest, lesser opposition. It gives them more opportunity to play and express themselves. Yeah. And it sounds like it's worked really well for Pino.
And it's the physicality of the game for Pino. That's the bit that he's got to work on, right? Which is, you know, he's still spending a lot of the game on the floor because people are just flooring him because he's tiny. Yeah. So he's getting better at that. Anyway, look, Nketiah, really, really good goal.
Good.
Poacher's goal. Okay. And it's his second goal in two games, both off the bench. Anyway, 15 minutes remaining. Sosa picked up two yellow cards. In 2 minutes, Neil.
Yeah.
In 2 minutes,
that
two
was
yellow
very
cards.
Strange.
After two, just late challenges. And it's one of them ones where you want to be annoyed with the guy, right? You want to be like, why have you done that? Because that could cost us the game, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, funnier things happen. But also, Glasner kind of summed it up quite well as what he referred to as collateral damage, which I quite liked that. I liked that term.
Well,
it's fluent tongue. I think that's a really good understanding of English there.
You need your defenders to put the foot in sometimes. You need the defenders to do certain things. That's one of the risks they put in place.
Well, that's the point. We're playing that high-pressing, intense game, and it's going to happen, mate. I'd rather them risk it and, you know, have that intensity because that's all part of the game. So, yeah, look, we were down to 10 men for the final part of the game. And, I mean, apart from a few late chances from Dynamo Kiev, I don't think we were particularly threatened.
No.
We were playing one man down. I think we were still holding our own very well.
You were. I mean, I think the overall stats indicate that as well. I think when you look at sort of how the team played overall, although, you know, as always, they're a counter-attack inside Palace. They ended up with 53, almost 54% of the possession, 13 shots, 7 on target. And I think the most telling point, really, from a data point perspective, is touches inside the opposition box.
Yeah,
Kiev had 8, Crystal Palace 24 away from home. So I think it just probably embeds that point of view that I had last week, which is, you know, you should be beating every team that you're playing up against, because they should be, you know, there shouldn't be an excuse really for
Fiorentina and Strasbourg. Let's just not forget them too.
Fiorentina,
all right.
Yeah, where are you playing them? Home or away?
We're not playing them yet, Fiorentina, but Strasbourg we are, and we're playing them away as well. The two better teams that we've got up against are both away. But look, what was an indication of how well Glasner thought that was going was that even though we were down to 10 men, he thought that it was a great idea to bring a 19-year-old on for his debut. Which was lovely actually, because. Rio Cardenas, he's a Trinidad and Tobago international, but he's 19. We've had him for quite a few years now. I think 3 years in the academy and all that. And I've seen this kid on the bench and warming up for kind of the whole of this season and the back end of last season. So he's had his opportunity to come on, but sat there patiently and waited for it.
He almost scored a goal as well, didn't he?
He was very close, but it just wasn't to be. It was spilled away by the keeper. Yeah. Another day, I mean, that would have been a hell of a debut for a defender, let's be honest. So, anyway, nice to see him on the pitch. And also, he's the kind of kid, even though he's 19, he don't look 19. Mm. As in, you met him down an alleyway, you'd walk the other way, right? You don't mess with him. He's built well. Strong kid. And I don't think... Yeah, I mean, he had a chance, great. I think he did get beaten a couple of times in them last few minutes. Yeah. So I think he's got a little bit to learn. But anyway, there we go. To summarise, Palace are off to a winning start in Europe. The best possible outcome there.
Yeah.
Beating the Ukrainian champions. You've got to take that. First, in our first ever European game. That's the bit you've got to remember, Neil. Our first ever European game, winning convincingly away in Poland. And we're now sat 7th in the Conference League table, obviously with the maximum points just on goal difference there. Mm-hmm. And obviously next up is AEK Larnaca from Cyprus, 23rd of October. Larnaca beat AZ 4-0 on their first win.
Right.
So there you go. So let's bring it on game number two. But a positive start to the Conference League for Palace.
I agree, mate. And in all seriousness, I think it's great that you've got a chance of winning the Farmers League. I think it's fantastic.
Listen, Neil, you've bought into what I bought into, which was, do you remember when Palace were in the Europa League and there was a chance that Brighton were going to get into the Conference League by default?
Yeah.
And I was calling it the Farmers League. I was talking about FC Tractor. I was being very derogatory.
Yeah.
Now, of course, my opinions have changed on this.
I thought they might have.
Which is that this is everything to us now.
It's one of the toughest competitions in Europe, isn't it?
No, but what it is a route into the Europa League.
It really is, mate. It really is.
And I, for one, aren't sniffing at that because I know damn well that, jokes aside, just like I would have been, if Brighton would very much like to be in our position right now. And I, even though you were in the Europa League before, you would have taken any kind of Europe.
There is nothing I can say to that. Apart from, that's it for another episode of Seagull Eagle. Thanks for listening.
Follow us, because unlike our strikers, we actually deliver every week. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X. Just search Seagull Eagle, because someone has to listen to us argue. Or, of course, drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com.
Now, we'll be back next week, even though it's the international break, to preview the Palace v Bournemouth and Brighton v Newcastle games, and also have a chat about how the season's going so far for both clubs. Newsflash, not great for me. Until then,
Seagulls!
Eagles.